Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here, as you always are, Fridays at 11 in the morning on LA Talk Radio. Yeah, the world's most irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk radio station, where you get a lot of everything you need. And, of course, I'm your friendly psychologist, as I said, Dr. Michelle. And we're not, you know, in a relationship in terms of therapy. But what I do is I give you a lot of suggestions and, you know, I read you information about studies that are really good and can help you out with certain things in your life, possibly. And, of course, what I'm doing today is answering a lot of your questions. I always invite listeners to email me in case you're new to the show at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. So what I do is... you know, I just sort of filter out a lot of the questions that are the most general, the most common questions I get, and then I can answer more people's questions that way. So what we're going to be talking about today, a bunch of stuff that's really pretty cool and interesting, and I thank you guys for reaching out and sending me some of these amazing questions that, you know, they are common, but they're a little different spin on things today. And we're going to be talking about the boss from hell, because I have so many people who come into my practice and talk to me about the stress at work. And it's usually from management, their boss, that kind of thing, and how to cope with it. And they just end up, you know, usually wanting to be a good employee and just shutting up and taking a lot of abuse from bully bosses. So we're going to be talking about how to deal with that today. Also, I had a fascinating email from someone who asked me a question about the truth of dying from a broken heart. Wow. I mean, we've all heard that expression. It's like an old wives' tale in a way. Well, as it turns out, it's really not. But I don't know about if we can die from a broken heart, but there sure are a lot of interesting things that they've come up with in terms of the heart and the mind and how they're connected and how we feel and how we can literally get sick. Of course, from being hurt and sad. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. That's really fascinating. Also, we're going to be talking about music therapy, which is one of my favorite subjects because we all love music, right? And we all have sort of different tastes and interests. And that's what's so awesome because, you know, we all get to choose what we like. And I'm going to tell you sort of how music can make our lives better. So it's called music therapy, and it's been around a long time. So we're going to be talking about that as well. Also, we're going to talk about how to talk to your partner about sex. That's one of my other big situations that I encounter in my work environment. I do have a lot of couples come in to see me. And it's a little awkward because, I mean, this is mostly for people who've been together a long time. And the sex dwindles. And, you know, that happens. It just happens. But we have to be more spontaneous and find new ways, things like that. I'm not a sex therapist, per se. But I do have some really great ideas, you know, how to get it together and get things fired up again. We're going to be talking about that because Kelly emailed me about that situation with her and her husband. And what we're also going to do is try to answer your question about how to tell... out there in the dating world, girls, how to tell if you're doing a lot of online dating, texting, meetups occasionally, that kind of thing, if he's just looking to get you in the sack. Okay. So great subjects today. And I thank you all for reaching out and, you know, asking questions. And these are really, really good subjects. So let's get rocking with this bad boss thing. I hear this again so much of the time. So Justin writes, I have the boss from hell. He puts a lot of his work on me and my coworkers at the last minute. And if we don't do it his way, even though he doesn't explain what that is, he literally screams and yells in front of everyone. He degrades each one of us. No one likes this bullying manager, but he is friends with the owner of the startup that we all work for. Most of my coworkers and I get along great, but the boss is from hell. Oh, God. He'll never get fired. So how do we cope with it? All right, this is a great subject. Quit. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kind of not kidding, actually. But no, we can't just quit. And people say, well, why don't you just leave your job if you're unhappy? Right? Do your friends say that to you? Sure, it's not easy going out and getting a new job these days. Especially something that, you know, if you're at a certain level in your occupation and you've really worked hard, you paid your dues, even a couple of years, you know, you've learned your skill or whatever. And it's really difficult, you know, working in startups. A lot of them go out of business pretty quickly. So you want to hang in there and get your experience. And especially if you have coworkers who are really awesome to work with. So the goal here is how to cope. So absolutely having a bad boss can make you miserable. But, you know, there are some ways to manage up. So I'll give you some statistics here, things that I've been reading about. About half of American workers have left a job to get away from a terrible boss. Yeah, those are the statistics right now. So half. Yeah, can you believe that? I know. So only 21% of workers think their performance is, quote, managed in a way that motivates them to do outstanding work. That is State of the American Workplace Gallup poll at the end of 2017. So this is like one of these kind of recent Gallup polls. Yeah. 21% says that their performance is managed in a way that motivates them. In other words, their bosses are pretty decent and they're kind of motivated. Only 21? Are you kidding me? So, here's the deal. A full-time worker is going to spend more than about 2,000 hours at work every year. So having a bad boss has a huge impact on our overall well-being and happiness. And it can even lead to really bad symptoms. We can get depression and anxiety and even PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. I mean, if someone's, you know, really a bully and someone's demeaning us in front of our coworkers, and we already may have some issues about not feeling great about ourselves. Wow. But having a bad manager, I want to clarify this, guys. It doesn't always mean that you should up and quit. And there's lots of different reasons why we might have a bad relationship with our manager. But often it comes down to poor communication or lack of it. You know, there's a really good book, by the way. I want to recommend it. It's by Mary Abagé, and the book's called Managing Up, How to Move Up, Win at Work, and Succeed with Any Type of Boss. So, yeah, I'll give you that name again at the end of my little pep talk here. It's a really good book. So you have to think about how you like to communicate, right? You have to understand how your boss likes to communicate. And kind of access the gap between the two of you guys and figure out what you can do differently. Okay? So managers usually come in lots of different flavors, to name a few. You might have a ghost boss. That the ghost boss is the person who rarely communicates with you and she's like never around. Right? Uh-huh. There's a seagull boss, right? Sometimes they talk about the helicopter boss. Same deal. They kind of swoop and poop or swoop and scoop. They dive bomb into a project and then they leave the mess behind. They get all excited. Here's what we're doing. And yeah, we've got this going on. And you got to do this and that. Here you go. Fix it. Right? Right? They'll just dive into it, and then they'll sometimes take it away from you and say, you're not doing it right. And then they'll make you look really bad, too. There's the simple, incompetent boss, the Michael Scotts of the world. Right? And, of course, lots of managers, because of their own personality styles, they're a combination of these different styles. But the thing to keep in mind, guys, is that often the relationship we have with our boss or our managers is based on our perception of his or her behavior and not necessarily the reality of how he or she is acting. I know that's hard to separate. It's kind of like, let me wrap my head around that one. This is called the fundamental attribution error in CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. We call it like a cognitive bias, right? The way we're thinking, we have a bias that leads us to attribute behavior we don't like to other people's characters rather than circumstances or outside factors. So we put people in a box, basically, is what I'm saying. So you got to understand that whenever we see behavior in somebody that isn't what we want, right? Even our bosses, partners, anybody, we tend to make up a story about why they're doing these things. So we can say things like, they're ghosting me, so they don't care about me. Or that's a disappearing boss. Or they swoop and scoop and poop and they just kind of dump these huge projects on us and then they leave us alone to go, huh? And that means that they're incompetent or stupid and they just, no, not necessarily. And the whole thing about, well, they don't really care about us. Well, that may be true, but another story could be they're really busy. The boss is really overwhelmed and they're just freaking out because the managers of them or the owners of the company, you know, are on their booties all the time. So they could just trust you, too. That's another thing. I mean, if a boss just dumps a lot of stuff on you, says, do this, that usually means that they feel good enough about you that you can pull this off. So you've got to kind of think about that. So it's really important to try to cultivate better communication with your boss. You know, it's easier than it sounds. Okay. So you got to sometimes just ask your boss to coffee if they have time or will spend time with you. Or if you want to go make some time, make a little appointment to just chill with them in their office, sit down. And you can ask him or her some questions. Okay. Like, number one, what are your preferences in terms of how you like to communicate or talk? Would you like me to answer questions for you? Would you like me to respond to what you're saying? Would you like me to just shut up and salute you? No, you can't say that to your boss. But how would you like to communicate? And everybody has their own style. Like, I give you a project, and I'm going to be hovering around you. And if you have any questions, just email me, text me, or whatever. But I'm busy, so don't come in and talk to me. Whatever way they like to communicate, you've got to figure that out and chat with them. Because that way you're showing them that you respect the way they like to communicate. Some don't. Some can't. They have social issues. But they've just been plopped into these management positions. So maybe, what are your preferences in terms of how you'd like to communicate? Now, I'm not talking about getting all warm and fuzzy and doing a therapy session with your boss. No, I'm just saying, how would you like to work these issues out? Okay, because you're showing that manager respect, that you're hearing them and the way they want to talk or deal with you, because it's usually never really brought up. You just get into a job and then it's like, this is the way the boss is. Number two, you need to ask, what are your priorities on this project? Or what are your priorities in general in terms of getting things done? That way, again, you're showing the boss that you care and you want to go about it in the right way so you can perform the duties. Also, another great question to ask your boss, what are your pet peeves? What really bothers you in the workplace with some of the employees here? And what can I do to make myself better? One-on-one. Okay, this is how you deal, too, with the bully boss. You get them one-on-one. If you can't get them out to coffee, which usually you can't, just make a little time, go in their office. And these questions are kind of designed to get at the core of the manager-employee relationship. And if you can approach them kindly, approach them honestly, like you're really there to learn, how can I, you know, do best to make you look good, manager? That's basically what we're talking about here. So if you can have an open, honest conversation around them, you can save a relationship, or, you know, you can bolster a solid one. If you have a decent one, they can go, wow, that person's really on board. So he or she, your boss, will think better of you if you're willing to, you know, own it. Well, you're not doing this, so you're not stepping up to this. Don't defend. Go, oh, okay, I see. How could I make it better? Let them help you solve the problem. You know? So the problem is sometimes, though, if you have bully bosses, as Justin explained to me, if the well is poisoned, they say the well is poisoned. So, you know what I'm saying? Signs to watch out for include spending more time thinking about how to deal with your boss than actually working. Mm-hmm. Signs to watch out for: dreading going to work every day and feeling physically or mentally exhausted or sick. Three biggies. Those are signs. And if you've tried everything you could think of and you're showing these signs, you owe it to yourself maybe to leave. Now, disclaimer, you and I do not have a therapy relationship. I'm not telling you to leave your job if your boss is difficult. I'm just saying you need to help yourself. Physically, we can get sick if we're in an environment around us where we feel overwhelmed, put down, humiliated. We can. So you have to be careful and just, you know, give yourself a little heads up on what are you thinking about? Your job or how to deal with the boss? Huh? Do you dread going to work every day? Yeah. Are you feeling really fatigued and overwhelmed? Yeah. Everybody else probably is too. So maybe it's good to get together with some coworkers outside the office, have a little chat, so you can feel a little better about, well, this is the way it is here. And either, you know, we're going to try to communicate the best we can, or we're going to be out of here. But again, I'm not telling you to leave your job. Please. There are ways that you can manage it. And thank you so much, Justin, for emailing me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com about that. Because that's a huge issue going on. People just sometimes don't know how to manage. You know, they just don't. They don't have great communication skills. You know, turns out to be like a scene from The Office. I always watch that on Netflix. I love that show. So fun. anyway, yeah, that's what it's like. So anyway, guys, we're moving on to another question. And this is Dr. Michelle Cohen. If you would like to email me here, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And you're on the couch as you always are. This time, 11 in the morning Pacific Standard Time on LATalkRadio.com. Channel 1. Also, all my shows are available on iTunes podcasts for free. Just pull up On the Couch, and that's me. And also, of course, the shows, as soon as they're off the air, go into the archives so you can listen to it again. Download, replay, whatever you'd like to do. Okay, cool. Moving on. This is a great question. I love this question because everybody says, oh, that's like an old wives' tale. Old wives' tale are things that are told over and over and over and over and over and over. That are really not true, but they just keep being repeated. So, moving along, let's look. Here we go. This is from Lindsay. All right, here we go. Thanks, Lindsay, for this question. My friend suggested... Oh, wait. No, that's not... We're going to do music therapy in just a bit. That's Lindsay. Thanks, Lindsay. Wait, hold on. What we're doing right now... Ooh, I'm going to blame my producer on this one. No, I better own it. I just picked up the wrong letter. All right, here we go. All right, Angie, here you go. This is... this is about dying of a broken heart. Angie says, my husband always says to me that his mother passed away early because, quote, she died from a broken heart, unquote, because his dad left her for another woman and his mom found out that he had been cheating on her for years. Is this real? Can someone really die of a broken heart? Well, doctors say yes. There is some indication. But let me just tell you what I know about the heart and the brain. So it's like people go, well, the heart doesn't have a brain. The heart doesn't. Well, there are a lot of connections going on. So if we have enough pain and suffering, we can literally make ourselves sick to the point where we suffer and can get our immune system lowered. So in that sense, maybe, but you have to really, really have a propensity towards a low immune system, I think, before that can happen. I mean, you've heard of all these stories like, you know, elderly people when their partner they've been with for 50, 60 years passes away. It doesn't take much longer for them to leave this plane of existence either after that because they're really sad. So we hear these stories, but here's the deal. There's science showing that the heart and the brain are connected by efferent, or they're called descending and afferent ascending pathways. But 90% of the connecting nerve fibers, all right, come from the heart up to the brain. Did you hear that? 90% of the nerve fibers come from the heart, go up to the brain. Okay? So these direct neural pathways going up to the brain from the heart, they're continuously sending signals and information that interacts with and modifies activity in the brain's higher emotional centers. So that's huge. So these signals from the heart and the brain connect through a nerve and continue straight to the thalamus. That synchronizes the cortical activity like thinking and perceiving and understanding language. And then it moves to the frontal lobes, which is, you know, that's the high-functioning area of our brains. Yeah? And then it moves to the amygdala, which signals emotional memory. So check this out. They found that the core cells of that part of our brain, which signals emotional memory, synchronizes to the heart's beating. What? That means if your heart center is open, it's keeping your brain's survival centers in check. So it's possible then that the more heart-centered you are, the less likely you'll react to stressors in your life. And the reverse is also true. So the less energy you have in your heart center, they say, the more likely you'll be living in a survival mode. So this tells us in research, guys, that our feelings and heart rhythms affect what emotional memories and responses transpire in us. So stress and anxiety can trigger brainwave patterns to match an anxiety habit of the past. Right? We go back to the old stuff. We always go back to the old stuff because it's normal. We're just conditioned. It's habits. That's how we survive because we, you know, we're kind of fear-based sometimes. Oh my God. From the olden days, if I run down that trail, the tiger's going to eat me. That's the fear. So I'm going to run down the other. We have to remember these things. So the thing is, again, feelings and heart rhythms affect what emotional memories and responses transpire in us. So stress and anxiety can trigger brainwave patterns to match an anxiety habit of the past. Okay, so just like a computer that matches patterns, elevated emotions of the heart can produce coherence and brainwave patterns. So if you're, you know, kind of pulling to you the feelings of your future by creating positive states, that's why, you know, like meditating or positive affirmations, like, you know, I am a good person. I am going to achieve what I want. I do deserve respect from other people. These are called common sense affirmations, not I'm going to be a billionaire in 2 years. Well, those are fine, but you got to believe them. So what happens is, if you're summoning the feelings of your future, I'm going to be happier. I'm going to be more comfortable with a new partner who's going to be loving to me. You know, you're going to create better states of mind. Your brain is beginning to lay the neural networks for future emotions or a new destiny that's positive. That's why we have positive affirmations and plans that we write down. Okay? So what happens is there's the discovery of the neural pathways from the heart to the brain proves that the heart independently processes emotions, responds directly to the environment, and regulates its rhythms without receiving information from the brain. All right? The heart and the autonomic nervous system always work together. That's the brain. Okay? So, to put it simply, emotions and feelings coming in the heart play an important role in the way we think, process information, feel, and understand the world and our place in it. And you have to, you know, activate the heart center. Be a little more loving. Be a little more positive. Reach out and care for people. Have more social interactions that are positive. Don't be around people who are hateful or negative and cause anxiety. That's why they say the heart. Love represents love and good feelings. So the more good feelings we have, the more we're sending these signals to our brains. 90% of the connecting nerve fibers come from the heart, go up to the brain. What? Yes. So the more you have loving feelings, the more you feel good, the more you care about other people, the more you have empathy, the healthier you're going to be. The more you have pain, anger, conflicts, problems, stress, it hurts your heart. Okay? So those are just some facts that I read and I have learned in the past about the heart and brain connection. That's really heavy. That's really heavy. So thank you so much, Angie, for writing me. And I appreciate, and I hope you kind of, you know, got some good information from that, because it really is, it's really heavy stuff. And I think it's really true. Really, really good stuff. So let's move on. We were going to talk about music therapy as well, and how that changes your feelings and how that can really make you feel better. But what I wanted to do first is answer this question, because I know some of the people have tuned in, because I see the board lighting up here. One of the most common things that I hear from people, couples actually, is how do we improve our sex life? How do we talk about awkwardly the things that we like without hurting our partner when we need to talk about sex? You know, I mean, we've been together a long time and things have gotten a little like boring, and we've gotten into this habit and the sex is like routine, and it's almost like sometimes a chore. I mean, I hear these things, I'm like, what? Yeah, I guess that's what's going on here. Or it's just avoided because there's other things to do. You know, like watch Netflix or go online or whatever. So here we go. And thank you so much for emailing me. The most common sex issue faced by otherwise happily married couples? It's the not enough factor, or what's going on, or what's happened to us in the bedroom. Okay. So, how do I talk to my partner about sex? This is the main question. You have to talk to your spouse about it. They're not psychic. They're not going to, you know, go back into knowing what you want. Talking about to men and women, I'm talking to both you guys. All right? Whatever orientation sexually you have, I'm talking about the partners here. You got to talk to each other. So I'm just going to give you some pointers on, you know, how to talk to your partner about sex. You know, there's dimming and sexual intensity and frequency. And if you're in a relationship long term, or, you know, if you start thinking about your partner in a negative way, or they're doing negative habits. Used to have somebody come in years ago. They're not with me any longer. They went to another state. So, who said, that their wife quit her job. They didn't have kids. She just wanted to kind of lay around and watch TV and not work anymore. And they were kind of struggling financially. And her partner said, wow, I'm having to do all the work. I'm having to go to work. I'm working 10 hours a day just to keep everything cool. and the resentment started to grow. So if there's any kind of resentment in a relationship for that person isn't helping enough around the house, or that person isn't bringing in enough income, or that person is doing habits that are not very nice, or they're not talking to me nicely, the sex drive just dwindles. Because when you lose respect, you lose that passion, you lose that spark, you lose that caring like you used to have, because circumstances in your life have changed, or that person's changing, then you don't kind of have that thrill to want to be with them. So here are some pointers about discussing the subject with your partner. Do not talk about sex in bed when you're no, right before or after sex when you're naked is not the best time to talk about the faults or dissect the performance of your partner. It's when you're at your most vulnerable. Plus your bedroom, and certainly your bed, should be a sanctuary, not a place to air grievances. So if you're going to talk about sex, and we're going to talk about that a little bit with your partner, choose a pleasant but neutral place. You can go to an outdoor restaurant. Yeah, that's romantic. Where people won't be around to listen to you. Or go out to the beach and sit on a, bench somewhere. Calmly have a talk. Hold hands. Go out to the park. Don't be around people. Go to a nice, kind of outdoorsy, comfortable place. I would say get out of your own place that you're in, because that energy is in there and it's uncomfortable. So if you make it a new calming environment, it's better. Make a plan to talk sometimes. There is something to be said for spontaneity, but this probably is not the time for it. So if you kind of blindside your partner, you're more likely to make them defensive. So give your partner a heads up that you want to chat about, there's something that's been on your mind, and, you really want to be closer to your partner, and, you feel attracted to them, and you just want to talk about things. So let them know. Make a plan to talk. Just don't hit them up while you're cutting up the carrots for dinner. Okay? All right. And when you're talking to your partner about wanting to have more intimacy and, how can we make our sex life better, look back fondly on the good, hot old days. The good, hot old days, honey. Right? So sometimes a shared sense of nostalgia for what the two of you used to do can be enough to lead you down the path of talking about sex openly. So, for instance, you could say something like, "Hey, remember when we used to spend hours just making out? I miss that." Or something like, "I loved it when you used to just grab me from behind or wherever. I love that." Some people don't love that. But if you loved it, you can say something like, "It made me feel so wanted. I love it the way you used to look at me. I love it when we used to get the same joke and nobody else did. And we just touch each other or hold hands and get this spark in our eyes. Remember when we used to..." Da da da, on and on and on. The "remembers when we used to," not condemningly. "Remember, we used to do it this way. Why aren't we doing it now this way?" No. You look at it fondly and you laugh and you go, "Oh, wasn't that funny? Wasn't that hilarious when we did it in the elevator and stopped the elevator that time?" Whatever it is. Bring the hot, good old days back. And that's in your talk when you're comfortable. And realize that sometimes our partners don't automatically know how to please us. But they don't. Sometimes they're not psychic, and we all change. Okay? So there's always a cliche that I hear, a lot from women. It's the bumbling, fumbling man who can't find his way around the female body. But, sometimes it's not about the guy. Always. And sometimes it's true on both sides. But what's actually more common is that what used to be a surefire pleasure inducer doesn't work anymore, because our bodies change. Our hormones change. We shift preferences as we get older. Like I said, we change. Things change, you know. And if you don't tell your partner how that works, what you'd like, then they're not psychic. They don't know. You know, how will they know? So you got to think of new creative ways, whatever it is, you know. Or, you know, roadblocks will be put in and you'll keep saying, I just don't want to do this anymore. It's like a chore. So you have to kind of talk about things that you'd like to try and see how your partner responds. Whatever, you know, just feel open enough to say, you know, I think my hormones have changed. Wow, it's so weird since I had the kid. Kids, or whatever. I don't feel good about my body. And you know what I hear so many times from partners? Sometimes one partner will say, I hate my body. I feel so fat. And the other partner will say, I love you just the way you are. I love you the way you are. You got to embrace that and take that as real and enjoy it. Okay? And also when you're talking to your partner about what you would like sexually, you got to be clear about what you want as well. So if you're not sure what floats your boat, you know, there's no way you're going to be able to communicate it to your partner. You know? You've got to just kind of talk to your partner about what you don't want and what you do want. And don't put them down. Again, you know, I don't like it when you, it's a way in the tone that you talk to that person. It's the way you talk to the person that is so important. You've got to really see that. Yeah, I really want you to think about that. It is the way that you talk to your partner. We can do so many things, but if we talk to our partners in the right way, we're going to get good things done a lot of times. So it's really important for us to know those things. And I thank you so much for asking and reaching out about how to talk to our partners. You know what I'm saying? Because it's really, communication is it. Communication is everything. It's the way we come off with the tone of our voice too. And if we're, you know, trying to second guess somebody, or they're coming off like a jerk, or they're trying to hurt, ask, are you trying to hurt me? What do you mean by that? What are we doing here? That kind of thing. So what you have to do is you have to really work with that. Okay? Work with your communication. You know, you can go and find about anything when it comes to communication. So anyway, thank you so much for emailing me, and I really appreciate that, because that's really helpful. You know, that'll help us all and everything. So we got a caller on the line right now at 323-203-0815. Hey, who's this?
Hello, Dr. Michelle.
How you doing?
Hey, this is Anthony.
Anthony, how are you today? What's going on?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing great, Doc. First of all, I want to say thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, so nice and, to have you here. I love
you've,
it.
You've helped me in a lot of different issues with my life. I always listen to your show, and it seems like you always have an answer. So I really want to thank you for that.
Oh, wow.
Dr. Michelle, today I'm calling to talk actually about music therapy. Something that has really been substantial in my life.
Wow.
Music has helped me tremendously in my life get through some really difficult times, you know, times when I thought there was possibly, you know, no other way out. Music has really been the only thing that has been there for me. You know, people come and go.
Even
people that are very close to me, unfortunately, you know, things happen, and we don't always stay in contact, and no one means to, you know, to be mean or any way. It just so happens that's kind of what happens in life. And,
yeah, it's true.
And, you know, some of my closest friends and even some of my closest family, I have, you know, two brothers and a sister, they got up and they left. They moved to another state to start the family, which I respect, and I, you know, want the best for them. But it leaves me kind of here alone. So I really found that music has been the only stable outlet for me to express my energy and to somewhat heal.
Wow.
Music has been
extremely
healing for me.
That's wonderful.
I just want to call in and get your input, Dr. Michelle, on what you think about music therapy. If you think there's any other types of music that I could be listening to, which would increase, this powerful feeling, or just your ideas in general on music therapy.
That's a great question. And thank you, by the way. Anthony had emailed me earlier and said he was going to probably call in about music therapy. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you did call. And it's really nice to hear a voice, a live person calling in here.
Oh,
and I do try to... Oh, go ahead, honey. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's so great to be on the line with you. I can't believe I'm actually talking to Dr. Michelle. This
you're
is so,
so
cool.
Sweet. Well, you're cool. You are cool. And thank you so much for asking about this because when I read your email, I thought, wow, I do have some information about, music therapy. My office partner is a musician, Dr. Alan.
Wow.
Yeah, his name's Dr. Alan Camo, and he has actually a record company that he created because he writes his own music. It's more like folk music, a lot of it. But he's an amazing guitarist, and he sings kind of bluesy and all that. He's really good. But anyway,
I got to check it out.
Well, yeah. And what he does with some of his patients sometimes is he, helps them, find some of the music that really pulls at their heartstrings, and makes them feel good.
Yes.
He does that. I mean, that's not his main thing. But anyway, he's influenced me a lot. And here's the thing with music. It has a way of sort of calling up memory. Right? Of a specific time and place in our life.
So, oh, very nostalgic.
Right?
Absolutely.
Exactly. So the moment like is magic. It's like nostalgic. And so like if a song starts playing and has your brain like started recalling images of certain times and places, right? And people.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So let me talk science here a little bit. So neurologically speaking, what happens is the song acts as an external cue. Okay. Song is a cue. Brain burp, causes a specific set of neural networks in our brains to fire. So then what happens is when we associate that music, we start to see images in our minds that have been frozen in time. Like all these little long-term memories. We call this like an associative memory, right? So it's associated with a time or people or place. Just like if we hear really bad music or annoying music and we're in a really bad mood, we try not to remember those, but they can trigger feelings too. So if you take the memory of that song further and really feel it and get into it and maybe even sing and dance along or close your eyes and rock back and forth. I know you do that. I can see you doing that, Anthony. You might notice that the corresponding emotions connected to your memories begin to move throughout your body. Do you feel that, guys? You feel that before, Anthony? Right?
I do. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfectly said.
So whether the memory of that song relates to your first love or spring break or high school or what you felt before walking onto the field before like whatever sport you might play or, afterwards winning a victory, right. All these memories are strongly embedded with feelings and emotions if we listen to music associated with those things when they were happening. And when you feel the emotion deeply enough, it connects you to the energy of your past. And the stronger the emotional response, the greater the memory. So in the moment you feel and experience that memory and it brings you, kind of to past life and your mind and your body are instantly transported through time. In other words, it's almost like you've heard me talk about like quantum. There's no time or space sometimes, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So just as it did in the past when you were so excited and feeling good, you're listening to this song and you associate it with, like this amazing victory you had when you won the race or won the contest or met this wonderful person you fell in love with, your body actually comes out of its resting state and it causes you to feel the same emotions of your past, the good stuff. All right. So for that moment or however long the song lasts, you're feeling every, note and every little phrase and pause and all that. What happens is you're just totally in the past. So right. Long-term memories are stronger when the amplitude of the emotions associated are higher, right?
Mm.
So, yeah, exactly. So, and on the other side, like whether a long-term memory is positive or negative, it has no bearing on how our mind processes the memory. All right?
Right.
So, so what if you could create a movie of your future? How about this? And pair it with a song that motivates and inspires you so much that it pulls you out of your resting state. So here's the thing, is I had somebody come in my office a couple of weeks ago, and they're practicing to run some, you know, like 10Ks, and they're going to be working on going up for the marathon here in Los Angeles. And they're pretty conditioned, but they don't still have that confidence. And they said they're embarrassed. It's kind of corny. But they've watched that movie Rocky.
Rocky!
Yeah.
I love
that. Running up the stairs in Philly, you know, running up to the top of those stairs. And that music, you know, everybody knows that music if they've seen Rocky. And what he was telling me that he does is every time before he goes for a run of conditioning, he does that, he plays that music. So what he's doing is he's creating a movie of his future with the music.
Right.
And he's pairing it with that song that is motivating and inspiring to him. And it pulls him out of his doubt state of, oh my God, what if I can't do this? Or what if I can't? And it changes your state of being. And it connects you to your future memories. So if the music is the soundtrack of your life or something that you really want that charges you up, then that's where you can create it in your future. You're going to see yourself running and winning that race or whatever, you know, whatever you want to do. You're going to see yourself feeling good. You're going to see yourself succeeding. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And actually, Dr. Michelle, what I was going to say is I do remember listening to one of your shows actually not too long ago where you talk about taking past experiences and taking the emotions from those past experiences and then relating them to a present circumstance, and then using the feeling of that experience to help in manifesting what you're looking to, you know, what you desire.
Right.
So, so essentially, and this is for a greater understanding, from my greater understanding. I mean, you said it perfectly. But so, if there's something that I'm looking to work on in my life, for example, one thing that I am deliberately focusing on right now is attracting a partner, right?
Oh,
attracting
nice.
Someone that that gets me and that loves music and that's on the same you know vibe as me. And so, if I listen to a song where, for example, I remember the song that we were listening to, you know, the movie Pretty Girl, where she's the dancer, and it's And, okay, so it's the song where he lifts her up, you know? And, so my high school sweetheart, when we started dating, that was our song.
And that's great.
I just remember listening to that song and, like, feeling really comfortable and really happy that I was with her. So
that's great.
Listen to that song and I feel the feeling of having someone that loves me there, then what you're saying is I am essentially kind of moving through time and space, moving my consciousness through time and space to get closer to attracting whatever, you know, that same type of circumstance, just in a different way, in a new way.
And I don't mean to interrupt you, Anthony, but we're going to have to wrap in about a minute here. I think you're really on the right track. No pun intended, the track of music here. But if you can think of that song that motivated you and made you feel wonderful with that person, if you can listen to that song and envision someone special coming into your life and that you're going to create that feeling again and that someone's going to, you know, and you're going to be the best person you can for that person as well.
Cool.
You know, I'm all into because that makes positive, hopeful feelings. Anything we can create that's hopeful and positive is going to have a great outcome. Just know that if you create positive things in your mind and loosen some of the fears of, oh, I'll never find somebody. It's not going to work out. And get rid of that.
Right.
Music will help inspire you feel better. If you keep recreating the good stuff that you felt from that music at the time those things were happening, you're having more positive cellular growth. Things are happening. The heart and the brain are working together. And it's very inspiring. So that's music therapy right there.
Thank you so much for calling in, and I'll keep emailing you.
Great, love to hear from you. Thank you so much for calling in, Anthony. I really appreciate it. Have a blessed week, and keep in touch.
Oh, you too. Blessings and love to you. You're the best. Thank you, Dr. Michelle.
Thank you. Bye, bye, honey.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys, that's about it. Wow, my goodness, this has been fast. I can't even believe how quickly this has gone today. Thank you so much for emailing me, everybody. I got to get out of here. Dr. Michelle on the couch. Stay here for more great shows coming up here on LA Talk Radio. Next week, we're going to find out about sort of creating rituals in our lives. How can rituals, not like religious, you know, rituals like voodoo and things like that, but no. How can habits, good habits and rituals that are good for us, help our lives? We're going to be talking about that next week here on the couch with Dr. Michelle. Take good care of yourself first, and you'll be great for others. Bye-bye.